Last summer, the online publication Inc., I-N-C, period, offered an article titled, Three Ways to Maximize the Benefits of Your Vacation. The article began earnestly, taking vacation is often good for business. It can improve your performance and build your employees' confidence. It continued with a three-point program for efficient vacationing. University of Virginia historian Cindy Aaron has written a book called Working at Play, A History of Vacations in the United States. A review in Publishers Weekly summarizes, the idea of leisure has historically represented dangerous idleness, and even sin, to many Americans influenced by the legacy of Puritanism. It continues, drawing on diaries and journals, as well as social histories, popular magazines, economic analysis, and advertising, Aaron shows how 19th century middle class vacationers frequently justified their time away from their jobs by structuring their trips around the pursuit of health, religious experiences, or educational self-improvement. On the other hand, factory owners and conservative social critics could justify vacations for the working class only by viewing them as a way to increase productivity. Idle hands, warns a familiar proverb in Hebrew scripture. Idle hands are... I asked in the earlier service, how do you know that? Where's that come from? So we defend vacations as being good for business and can indulge in them so long as they are efficient, educational, or otherwise edifying. When we're not taking one of these productive vacations, we go about our days announcing with unmistakable exhaustion just how really busy we are. We even excuse retirement by declaring ourselves so busy that we wonder how we used to have time to squeeze work into our overly committed lives. Which brings us to today's topic, wool gathering. Wool gathering. It's an odd, rather quaint word of inconclusive derivation. It means indulging in idle daydreaming. Or as another definition has it, indulging in wandering fancies and purposeless thinking. And yet another, indulging in vagrant or idle exercise of the imagination, roaming upon a fruitless quest. The shared sentiment in each is wool gathering is indulgent. A word itself freighted with unmistakable pejorative implications. The use of this word wool gathering extends back centuries. The late 16th and early 17th century English playwright Thomas Middleton asks, have you summoned your wits from wool gathering? There's a translation of a line from the 17th century Spaniard Cervantes that reads, but my thoughts ran wool gathering, and I did like the countryman who looked for his ass while he was mounted on its back. Not where you thought that was going. The term shows up in H.G. Wells' famed short story, The Door in the Wall, in which the protagonist, Lionel Wallace, admits, I had bad times after that, crying at night and wool gathering by day. For two terms, I slackened and had bad reports. More recently, a story in the Washington Post warned, it would be easy to slip off into wool gathering and miss a deadline. And Brennan Manding's book, Ruthless Trust, Tut Tuts, plagued by guilt, they took refuge in wine, women, and, you guessed it, wool gathering. You may have noticed that in each of these references, wool gathering receives a certain deprecation. It's hardly surprising. After all, rarely is indulging in idle daydreaming or purposeless thinking heralded as a positive use of time. You imagine hearing someone complimented as a master daydreamer. Or reading a college admissions essay declaring, I have been selected as most likely to engage in purposeless thinking. Or maybe a resume bragging, former employers have appreciated me for my idle fancies. There's a cartoon depicting a man in his office, telephone receiver in hand, saying, yes, sir, I'll get my chief daydreamer on it right now. Idle daydreaming may be something we all do. No, wait. Let's tell one of our best-kept secrets today. Idle daydreaming is something we all do. However, we certainly don't all admit to it and would never interject into conversations about busyness the admission that we regularly indulge in it. School days taught us the peril of idle imagining through stern rebuke and a sharp reminder to pay attention. True to our nation's Puritan pedigree, we value productivity, accomplishment, efficient time management with resultant output and income. We do not value idle fancies. Well, today, a beautiful day on the cusp of summer's official start. After weeks of more intense and important topics here, I stand before you to say a word in favor of wool gathering. Today, I offer you the unexpected call to idle daydreaming and purposeless thinking. Now, some might think that a sermon advising daydreaming is, well, redundant. I mean, do I really need, in this of all settings, to invite you to daydream? My keen intuition tells me not a few of you are doing just fine without encouragement from up here. But again, though we all do it, we're certainly acculturated to regard wool gathering as at best a sort of guilty pleasure. And I've had not a few of you admit with chagrin that your mind momentarily wandered off right in the middle of one of my riveting sermons. Thank you for that. When I was a student at a seminary just outside Zurich, I took a day trip with a friend to Lucerne. We spent the morning wandering about, seeing some sights, and then retired to a park bench along Lake Lucerne. It was there we made a completely unscientific sociological observation about styles of walking. The passersby, who appeared to be locals, walked upright, strolling often arm in arm, conversing, looking about. But those who seemed, at least to the two of us, to be U.S. tourists, usually walked at a certain angle. Face forward, head down, arms swinging, with a gait that suggested, we have to hurry because tomorrow we'll be in Geneva, or Milan, or is it Vienna? After all, who'd want to waste precious vacation days wool gathering. Late in his life, Thoreau wrote a lecture on walking in which he bemoaned, "I've met with but one or two persons in the course of my life who understood the art of walking, who had a genius, so to speak, a genius for sauntering." The art of walking? A genius for sauntering? Well, who has time to saunter? Who has the luxury of ambling about? After all, we're busy people with things to do and places to go and people to see. We learned at a very early age that the one who hesitates is lost, that we must make hay while the sun shines, and that, listen carefully, 11:15 people, that it is the early worm who gets, the early bird who gets the worm. You're late already. All the worms are gone now. While we even speak of the productive value of things like meditation or yoga or walking, not sufficient as ends in themselves, some justify them by some larger purpose. It makes me more attentive. I find I'm more productive afterwards. I'm not speaking against the utilitarian value of these sorts of activities, but must every waking moment be productive and worthwhile? I was amused by an article on the internet site WebMD entitled, "Why Does Daydreaming Get Such a Bad Rap?" It spoke in rather earnest terms of the value of daydreaming. Daydreaming can be beneficial in many ways, it reported, and ironically can actually boost productivity. And there you have it. We've even figured out how to use daydreaming to boost productivity. Well, that's not today's message. For once, don't get used to it. For once, this is not about boosting anything, bettering anything, broadening anything. In fact, it's not about doing anything. Wool gathering isn't productive. It doesn't win friends. It doesn't influence people. And it doesn't benefit the bottom line in a single way. It's idle. It's fanciful. It's purposeless. It's fruitless, as those dictionary definitions describe it. Think of it as, say, whiling the time away toward the sole end of whiling the time away. Calls to mind the old but relevant joke about the U.S. tourist walking along the dock in a coastal Mexican village. A fisherman paddled up in his small boat and removed a couple of sizable fish. The tourist complimented him on his fish and then asked, "How long did it take to catch them?" The Mexican replied, "Only a little while." The tourist then asked, "Well, why didn't you stay out longer and catch more fish?" The Mexican said, "Well, with these, I have more than enough to supply my family's needs." Which prompted the tourist to ask, "But what do you do with the rest of your time?" The fisherman said, "I sleep late, fish a little, play with my children, take siesta with my wife, stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and play my guitar." The tourist scoffed, "I can help you. If you can catch a couple of fish like that in a brief excursion, just imagine what would happen if you would stay at it. You could catch many more fish. In time, if you worked at it, you could buy a bigger boat. And just imagine, with all you'd catch in that bigger boat, you might even be able to buy another boat. You could become the owner of a fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you could sell your fish directly in your own market. You'd control the product, processing, and the distribution. You could run your ever-expanding empire. In time, you could become very, very rich. Then what? Asked the fisherman. Oh, the tourist gushed. With that kind of wealth, you could retire. Why, you could move to a small coastal fishing village where you could sleep late, fish a little, play with your grandkids, take siesta with your wife, stroll into the village in the evening where you could sip wine and play your guitar. Now, many of you know me well enough to realize that I am an unlikely mouthpiece for this message. I've been called a lot of things here and elsewhere, but too relaxed, too laid back, overly idle, these aren't usually charges leveled against me. You must surely know I am not one to commend a life of wanton purposelessness. I'm not suggesting that being productive is something to be sneered at. I'm simply raising the possibility that maybe, just maybe, it's okay to let up every once in a while, not too often, and simply gather a bit of wool. You imagine us not needing to justify wool gathering to anyone, not even to ourselves. What if we don't need to apologize for being unproductive? What if we were to indulge shamelessly in idle daydreaming just to be idle daydreaming? Take a purposeless stroll, an aimless amble. Pay attention or not, be aware or not, gather a bit of wool along the way. You might be assuming that for once, this is a topic on which Ralph Waldo Emerson had nothing to say. And, well, you'd be wrong about that. In his essay, Spiritual Laws, Emerson wrote, "I see action to be good when the need is, and sitting still to be good also." Is there any chance that's true? That it really could be okay, good evening, even, just to sit still? What might happen? I mean, let's say you were given a moment just to sit still in complete silence. No agenda, no focus for your thoughts, nothing you were supposed to be reflecting on or benefit that you were supposed to gain from that time. What if you were invited just to do nothing for a moment? Simply to sit still in silence, maybe engage in wool gathering. How would you respond to such an invitation?